Welcome to this episode of EFL Unfiltered. We're going to be talking to Mick McCarthy on an illustrious playing and managerial career with conflict, with courage, and with some real charisma. It's going to be an absolute cracker. So, Mick,
thank you so much for having us.
Gorgeous setup, I must say. Very well appointed. We're very, very comfortable here in the sunny south. Literally and figuratively miles away from where it all started, the fourth division, Barnsley, the 70s. How far away does that feel to you right now?
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, Prutz, and you. I just might add it's nice of you to come because these have been here for 3 hours prior to so.
Did you think it was a bit of a setup?
Yeah.
I've got a crew on its way, I'm not coming, but good.
Yeah, going back to your question, it's a long way in miles and a long way in terms of a career as well, in where I started. But I love where I started and enjoyed every minute of it.
So tell us about football, with the greatest respect, that is from a different era. The fourth division, your hometown club, turning out for them, being told and potentially coming across people that would say that you'd never make it, that you couldn't put yourself into the position of a professional footballer, yet you do at home, with the people around you that you know and love. What was that like?
Starting at Barnsley, you know, I mean, I never thought... You're going through Barnsley Boys, Barnsley Juniors, got released from that, never thought I'd be there. It was Barnsley Boys Club, Keith Steele said, you should go down. His dad had been the manager, he was the secretary. They want to sign you at 16. So I walked down there, knocked on the door and asked, and secretary says, I've no idea who you are, I'll go and ask. Anyway, I did sign for, what was it, six quid for my mother and four for me or something.
Yeah.
And that's where it started, and it was wonderful. And I've loved every minute of it. I loved every minute of that, even divoting the pitch, sweeping the terraces, because that was great crap with the lads. Mm-hmm. And if you could find a few coins that somebody had jumped and lost out of the pocket, that was good fun. Enjoyed my apprenticeship, got in the team at 18. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't arrogant. I just thought that's what was going to happen. I'm going to be an apprentice, then I'll sign pro, then I'll be a pro footballer, I'll play for Barnsley, then I'll go and play for somebody else. Thank God that's what happened. But I mean, it doesn't happen to, no. You know, what is it? 3% of the people that come through it. So I'm very fortunate.
Given geographically, obviously playing for Barnsley and being from Barnsley, and in my head, there's a picture of to and from the ground. I mean, it might sound quite oldie worldy, like turning up with the punters, the people on the terraces are your mates as well as fans. I'm sure they were very effusive and forthcoming with feedback with regards to how the team was going, how you were playing. I mean, that's the great leveler, and it's a slightly different world now, given the different platforms of connection, should I say. But I've always felt that. I mean, if you hit a good pass, you got a clap. If you hit a bad pass, you got booed. There's a very instant way of knowing whether you're doing well or not on a football pitch. Is that magnified when you are from that particular place?
Yeah, and it's kind of even worse when there's only 2,500 people in there, because you're quite clear who they're shouting at. If you're shouting at you, they're not
looking at them. Don't think it's me, lads. No.
Yeah, I tell a story playing against. A bit of a joke, but he was playing against Newcastle, and Anna, my first child, had been born. I played against Newcastle, and Kevin Keegan was playing. And the first half, I played really well, and I was all over him, and you know,
yeah.
Didn't score. And I remember, as I always say, I remember coming off somebody's shouting at me, "Will you leave him alone?" Well, he's a Barnsley fan. He says, "We've come to see Kevin Keegan play, not you kick him all over the pitch." Anyway, not that I took any notice of what he said. Yeah. We lost 5-1, and Kevin ripped the backside out of me in the second half. You know, dropped deep. I couldn't get anywhere near him. He was brilliant. So yeah, I always think, you know, they'd actually come to watch him play, not me kick him, which I thought was strange for a Barnsley fan. Yeah, thanks for coming.
Yeah, so. And then the week after, Rivettin said, "Actually, quite enjoying you kicking lumps at the centre forward."
Yeah, but I got that because he was a superstar. Yeah. You know, coming down and playing. But yeah, I used to travel on the bus, of course, when I first going in all the time. And
for the games off,
I tried. I passed my test 18, and going to train on the bus,
yeah.
Absolutely, walking up the street. And
And would you be recognised? Would people say, that's...
No, not at that time. No. up until being 18, but even then, getting in the team, you know, small town, there's no TV presence, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly no
social media.
Social media. So, you know, it was at that stage, strangely enough, playing them, we all wanted to be recognised and known. And how that's changed now, I suppose.
I suppose about that perception of what, and again, we're talking about almost kind of half a century here, with of what a footballer was and what a footballer meant to the community and what should be kind of taken from them. It's completely different now, isn't it?
Do you know what? I think it's just changed because of the popularity of it.
Yeah.
Social media has changed it a great deal, of course. You know, we when he started to come in, as a manager, we're getting people coming in advising the players on what they should be doing on social media or not be doing on social media. For me, and I still think, you're expected to turn up and train and be pleasant with everybody while you're there at the training ground, train as hard as you can, do the best you can. And I think reality is that is when the supporters want you to do. But there's that much more engagement now through social media, just through life, I guess. But I do think most of the players, that's what they want, isn't
it?
To go and play at a club, be recognised as a good player, somebody they all respect for what they're doing, because that's the job.
Yeah. You mentioned the job and moving from Barnsley to Manchester City. Was that, obviously, in real time miles, it's not a huge distance, but away from home, away from a club that you know and love, and a chance at a higher level, was it tough to move on from them, or were you ready to go?
I'd had 270 odd years, I think. When he'd done the story, came how. And Norman Hunter, God rest his soul, was a hero of mine. But we'd had a little bit of a fight, me, because he'd picked somebody else. It was Larry Mayer's son, who was a great centre-half. Yeah. Nicky Lowe was playing. They were doing great together.
Yeah.
Of course, I got my nose pushed out of joint. So I'd done my time there. I'd done my fourth division, third division, second division. And I was ready for a move.
Yeah.
And so it was welcome when he came. And I was ready for it.
Yeah.
Like you said, mileage-wise,
nothing
problem,
really.
But a completely different club.
Yeah.
And the expectancy of what Manchester City brings.
Can you recognise that club now to what it was when you were there?
No chance. I got invited to go and do the Wolves game a few weeks ago. And I have to say, I've mixed emotions. I play for Man City. I've got real love for the club. But I managed,
of course. It's a great success.
Yeah, you know. And I'm watching the game, and I did it last year, and Wolves beat Manchester City. And I'm at Manchester City's training ground. So, and they've asked me to do it again. And Manchester and Wolves are losing 1-0 and then winning in the 96th minute. I thought, thank goodness, because I'll get asked back.
Yeah,
that's my last trip. If I had two Manchester City games and lost them both, I'm history. Yeah, Man City was just a different ball game altogether for me. It was brilliant.
Yeah. Celtic comes next. I mean, Manchester City is a big football club. I mean, Celtic is a global phenomenon at the time, obviously, given what it is to be a football player in Glasgow for either side of that divide. Obviously, the Irish connection as well. What does that then go up another gear and another world opens up to you?
Oh, yes, it did. You know, Manchester City comes to an end. We got relegated that season, and Davey Hay was
who
wanted to sign me. I'd gone to meet him, and I was away in I think it was Liechtenstein. And after the game, there's a melee outside, and it's all the press. And David Hay had been sacked, and Billy McNeil's got the job. So, you know, I've mixed emotions about that because Davey, I'd gone to see, I wanted to play for him.
Yeah,
Billy, I'd had, you know, three good seasons with him, or two and a bit seasons with Man City, and he'd signed me before.
Yeah.
And when I went up there and I got in the cab, I knew then what I was getting into. Chat about football all the way there.
Yeah.
Oh, I was. It did. Well, he gave me and propelled me to another level in terms of, although I'd been promoted with Barnsley and been promoted with Man City and playing the first division, this was now about winning things.
Yeah.
And also the different profile it gave me in Ireland, playing in the double team in 88 when I won the double again, you know. My profile suddenly went up, you know, the popularity if you don't play for Celtic, you're in Ireland. But the day we were having the team photograph, I realised what I was getting into. There's no trophies in front of us. And we're all sat, and Billy McNeil comes and sits in amongst us. And we're, you know, fuck, you know, it's a pain in the backside, isn't it?
Because all the players are messing around.
And then one of the lads says, where's all the cups, trophies?
Yeah.
And somebody says, oh, they're at Ibrox. Well,
God.
I'm telling you, you could have heard a pin drop. And Billy McNeil went into one. And rightly so.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're laughing about not having any silverware in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
He ripped into us about what it is to be a Celtic player. You know, you don't go to St Mirren and you don't go to Dundee United, well, they're a good team, and you don't go to Hearts and you get a famous draw at 1-1. You go there and you're expected to win.
Yeah, and win well.
And it was just, an absolute privilege to play there. And for all, I played at Man City, and I know Man City at that level now, in the Premier League, where they're expected to win.
Yeah.
That's the first time I'd experienced not wanting. We all want to win.
Yeah.
You're expected to win. And I loved it.
So to get up from that type of cauldron and hotbed to playing in Lyon, I mean, where did that come from? Was the continent on the cards for you? Was it part of your career plan?
Not at all.
I say career plan, like as footballers, you can go, I want to be here by then. No. If I'm there at 30, it'd be great. And then suddenly it's just left field, backs on the head. Do you want to go here? And
I told you my career plan. Apprentice at 16, pro at 18, professional in the first team, and go somewhere else and play.
See what happens.
And play football, yep. And keep trying to move on. No, it was. I played. So I was saying about the link between Celtic and Ireland. In 1988, we played in the European Championships, where there's only eight teams, and we're in a group with England, Russia, and Holland, England, us, and Russia.
And it's the Holland, Rijkaard, Van Basten, Hullet team, isn't
all
it?
All that, yeah.
My God.
And of course, the England team, because we had a great tournament there. You know, we beat England, we draw with Russia, and we lose to Holland to that deflector goal. If he was a cricketer and he could put that spin on it, he'd be wonderful. And that was what they'd seen me play.
Yeah. Shop window type stuff. Yeah.
Raymond Domenech comes to watch me then playing for Celtic, playing against Hearts. Mm. And that was one of the games I got sent off.
Of course it was.
It was a bit of a playing against Hearts and a bad tackle on one of our, who was a bad tackle and all. And I ran to get in the melee, as, you know, idiot, centre half do. And, because I think I had half a swing at him and he moved and I went flying. We all went and I get sent off. And Raymond Domenech loved it.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know that. I thought, well, that's...
Did you know that he'd come to watch it?
No, not in that one.
All right,
and he came to watch me in the cup final.
Mm.
And apparently, he told me, he said, I come to watch you for the, you know, you're going to get sent off. And I was late into the game. So there's only about 15 minutes when I get sent off. He'd sat down. He just sits in his seat and he sees me have a swing and I'm going off. But yes, he said to me, he loved the passion of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, he'd watch me play for Ireland, watch other games, I've no doubt, on video at that stage. Not on an analysis thing, it'd be video. And they came back in for me it was a bit like, I'd got 1 year left at Celtic. I didn't hear any vibes about. I'd had a bit of an issue with my knee.
I didn't get any vibes
that I was going to get another contract. And my contract was ending. And at the time, by the way, I hadn't had enough money to pack in playing. I was going to be 30, 31, 32. Mm. And Lyon came in and offered me a really good package and a 3-year deal with a year's option in their favour. So how am I not going to take that one?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to leave Celtic, but my final game was against Rangers. We won the cup, beat the final game.
Yeah.
So I left on a high.
Yeah.
Didn't want to leave, but I'm looking after me, Fiona, my, you know, Anna, Katie and Michael.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I didn't want to be 32 with a bit of a iffy old knee.
Yeah, because suddenly their perception changes, doesn't it? Suddenly you're an old man in football team. I'm only 32. What's going on?
Reality kicks in. Yeah. Right.
So then is it a traditional kind of fish out of water type thing? Now you're going to tell me that you learned fluent French yet.
No.
as a kid growing up. Because it is, I mean,
no,
again, we keep talking about the modern day because, I mean, I suppose if one of your kids goes off travelling, they can WhatsApp you from the actual plane as they're heading across the other side of the world. But it's a different country, there's a different language, different culture.
I turned up for pre-season, and by the way, pre-season was the hardest pre-season ever.
Yeah.
You think, you know, you had this perception about what being out there was like. But it was great because Raymond Domenech, we're centre-forward, I was playing against, his big name might come to, but he was man for man. He always used to put me on him.
Yeah.
Because he had a good respect for him, but he wanted to toughen him up. But when we played in one of the games, and he's saying about learning French, I went to lessons to learn French. I was trying my best to be all-inclusive, learn French twice a week. I'm in learning French. But in one of the games, the goalkeeper, a ball comes across and I'm going to head it. And he shouts, and everybody who speaks French, if this is not the case, he shouts, "Dégagez-vous." So this is what he says to me after. So I've stood back. The keeper's gone, "Dégagez-vous." I think he's coming for the ball, hasn't he? So he doesn't come for the ball, and the guy I'm stood with heads it in the net. So after the game, Raymond Domenech's asking me, and they're all talking French, and I can't understand the way they're saying it. They're all probably saying it's that big, and I was getting anxious, but, you know. So then the keeper says, "Je dis," which is, I said, je dis, "Dégagez-vous." I said, "Dégagez-vous." I said, "I don't know what dégagez-vous means." You're a clown. So then, what do I know? anyway, so if you can't, you have to edit it because I'm not changing. That's what it was. I was.
Do you know what it means now?
Well, I think apparently it's clear it. I was going to clear it. He didn't have to tell me to clear it.
No.
I head it. And he goes,
"This is literally what I do. I head balls into the box."
Dégagez-vous. I went, "What? Keeper?" I thought it was keeper. No. So anyway, that was my fault anyway. Yeah. Oh, dear.
But in and around. I'm particular with that. In and around all that, I mean, you mentioned Fiona, obviously, a lot. She's been there since day dot. And that sense of adventure that comes with decamping to somewhere else and the kids in tow.
Yeah.
Was it from a family decision point of view? Did they love being out there?
Yeah.
Gorgeous part of France.
We signed this 3-year deal and I intended staying there.
Yeah.
No question. Wanted to be there, wanted to learn the language, wanted to be European, if you like, part of me. You know, there's no suggestion about European. I'm saying it now after all the Brexit and what have you. But yes, we did. We engaged. Kids went to French school. Anna, our eldest, was coming and she's speaking for them like sponges. Were speaking
so much easier as a kid. She said, "Daddy, dégagez-vous means."
And he's like, "By the way, I'm sure that's what he said." Anyway, send them to French school. I mean, that was tough for them at the time. They'd come back, but they were they'd integrate in no time.
Yeah,
whatsoever. Moved into a lovely little suburb of Lyon. Yeah, and everybody's French. We're all trying our best, you know, to integrate. Fiona loved it. Funnily enough, when I get the call, and I'm out of the team now, and the World Cup's coming up. I think I've played 10 games. What I loved about it, so I'm training with the reserves. I might be a lot of things. I'm not stupid. Remy Gard and Bruno Engotti got in the team when I was injured.
Okay.
Well, we all know what they ended up doing. Like Remy Gard, France, Arsenal, Bruno Engotti, a legend, and Bolt. I know it doesn't sound strange now, but they're in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Fabulous, fabulous players. And I'm looking at them thinking, well, I ain't getting in that team. Yeah. They're going to keep playing like that. And they're only 20s.
Yeah.
So I end up going on loan to Millwall, which I'm sure you'll come to. It was Fiona, the story that I was talking about, because I get the call to go. I've got the World Cup coming up, 1990 it is. I'm the captain of Ireland. I want to play in the World Cup.
Yeah.
I'm not getting back in the Lyon team. I get a chance to go to Millwall, absolutely snatched their hands off and went. But it was when we came back and we were in the house here and I'd signed for Millwall. Fiona asked me to get me something from the attic. So I went to her, it was a bag of clothes, and she went into her bedroom and I went into her and she's crying. I said, so with you, are you all right?
Yeah.
She said, yeah, I can smell the detergent that I used in Lyon in France. And I said, she said, I didn't want to come home, Mick.
Really?
I loved it. She said, I didn't want to come home.
Did you ask her about Millwall coming?
Yeah.
What do you think?
You're telling me you sound like the Neanderthal I am then, aren't you? Of course we discussed it. Mm. And it was the best. Hey, I went on loan to Millwall with a thought I might play there the 10 games, play in the World Cup, and go back to Lyon, because they'd sign me, and I'll be fit. That was my intention. It wasn't to leave in totally. But as it transpired, it worked the other way, you know. And I got no vibe from Lyon that they were wanting me back. I think they were then trying to sell me. So.
Right.
But anyway, I played in the World Cup, and I'm still a Lyon player.
Yeah.
And Bruce Rio got a job at Millwall, and he wanted to sign me.
And then that element of coming back lock stock, we'll chat about the World Cup in just a second, but coming to Millwall, because it has had a big, that decision that you might not have made, obviously off the back of wanting to get back into the national side before the biggest tournament in world football, but the fact that we're sat here not a million miles away from where the roots are put back down here, coming back to Millwall, it was what turned out to be a massive decision for you and the family. They're all around here. Out there, you're still in this neck of the woods. It was your first managerial job as well. So that sliding doors moment of going, do you know what, I'll give it another crack at Lyon. You just don't know, do you?
That had a big bearing on it because, I've said, not playing in the team, Remy Gard, Bruno Engotti. And you know what? When you've gone out on loan and you're 31,
you're not an 18-year-old going out on loan.
They've let me go out on loan because he'd been here or whether or not. I think they... Oh, do you know what? I think I did all right in the games I played, and they appreciated what I did and what I gave to the team, you know, because wholehearted, whatever it might be. Yeah. But that was part of the reason, because I knew, having got to 1990, I'm 31. After the World Cup, I'm going to become 32. Mm. I've not got that long left. If I'd be 35, I'd be doing all right. I'd start, you know, I said about my knee.
Yeah.
I then started thinking I really ought to be coming back and doing my coaching badges, and because I want to stay in the game.
Yeah.
I never even thought about it until I got to that age. And I thought, man, I want to be in the game here. I want to still be in the game as a coach, as a manager. So reality is I ought to be coming back.
Yeah.
And not being in the reserves in Lyon as a 31-year-old, and I want to play in the World Cup.
Yeah.
That was very much in my thoughts.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a few seconds, but I quickly wanted to tell you about the EFL's fantasy football game. Fantasy EFL lets you pick players from across the Championship, League One and League Two. There's unlimited transfers, it's quick and easy to play, and you can even set up mini-leagues with your mates. And with monthly prizes, it's never too late to sign up. Search Fantasy EFL in your app store and play today.
So, Italia 90 potentially being the crowning glory of a playing career. The people that were there, just the roll call of teammates that you had, Jack Charlton, of course, being that real leader of people. And then the kind of reaction that you got back home in Ireland. It was, from the outside looking in, obviously, I've got a very English perspective on this, given the fact that I'd have been following England through that particular tournament, but obviously the early group stages, meeting England once again so soon after Euro 88, and that presumption that because it's England, they should be doing X, Y, and Z. But just looking like, with the ambition, of course, to do well in the tournament involved in this, but just have the Irish having just the most wonderful time.
Yeah, well, Jack galvanised us all. When he came in, there was a spell where, knock on Mr. Journalist wanted him, you know, it's Jack Charlton, it's an Englishman, and Englishman who's won the World Cup, Brian says, you know, why do we want him? Why? Well, actually,
that's quite a good thing.
It's a good thing, I would have thought, but it was almost as a negative. And we qualified for the Euros in 88, and it ended up Scotland had to beat Bulgaria in Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm.
Not likely, really thought.
Yeah.
1-0.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And we qualifying, and that, Jack was going to be out. And then all of a sudden, it's like we're going to a tournament, and we beat England, we drew with Russia, we lost to Holland, we're out of it. But we came back to a great welcome.
Yeah.
Then World Cup 1990, it's a different ballgame. Yeah. It's expectancy then that we're going to do well. But when you look back at the team and the players that we had, Jack had galvanised us all. And we were, so I'm 31, I'm the captain of the team going into it. But there's Kerry Moran, Andy Townsend, who's of a good age, Ray Houghton, who's probably mid to late 20s, yeah. Kevin Sheedy, Quinny, who's that, Tony Cascarino, yeah. John Aldridge.
Some team, you keep going, yeah?
Yeah, and you know, there was Chris Morris, Chris Hughton. I think we were the oldest team,
mm-hmm.
but we weren't old. We were experienced, all got loads of games under us. And do you know what the main thing was? Everybody loved coming and playing and turning up, and everybody loved Jack.
Yeah.
All right, there'd been one or two who left out. We weren't so loving of him, you know. That's always going to be the case. We all trusted him. He brought us in. He was at. We went to train at Elton Road one of the first time. We said, "This is how we're going to play."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "All these European teams play 3-5-2." He said, "They all want to play out in the back. They're that arrogant. They won't just boot it back over our edge. We'll stick it in the corners. We'll push up behind them. When they try and play out, we'll nick it off and we stick the ball in the box, we'll score."
It's like Disneyland.
All right, okay. And guess what? That's just what happened.
Wow.
And all this now about the gegenpress and high press and put them under pressure, look at it, go back as to when we were in the World Cup, there was a song that we did as the team,
yeah.
and it was put them under pressure.
Yeah.
And that's just what he got us to do. And so for all Jack's thinking on how he played the game and put in the corners and played up to big men and we got up behind it. When we got there, we played good football. Yeah. Much maligned now, but let me tell you, he upset the norm.
Yeah, yeah.
The status quo, the hierarchy, you know. Walloped Spain at our place, got to the World Cup and did well in the World Cup as well. Quarter final, you know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, and brilliant.
So the elation obviously of Italia 90 on loan from Lyon. Back to Millwall. Millwall then becomes your club, becomes the place that you've spent so many decades now. How does that go from being a player at the end of his career, or what you didn't realise was at the end of your career, then suddenly you're the manager? It was how quickly did that happen? Was it ever a shock? And was it ever going to be something that you would say no to? Is it in your plan? You said you didn't have a plan at the start, but
I didn't at the start. But having come back, it was in my plan to take my coaching badges, and strangely enough, I hadn't taken them.
Yeah,
because you know, I'm still engrossed in the football, and I had a few injuries at Millwall. I'm missing games, and again, I ended up even when I was fit, wasn't always playing. And I remember a night without. I was out with John Cahoon. We're at a pub. Guess what? Sunday night, and the lads had been, this is a while when Bruce has been in. I have to say, he didn't work for Bruce at Millwall, but he was a fabulous coach.
Yeah.
And some of the things he did were a bit, well, like, and I think maybe caught all us a bit by surprise to the level he was doing. Anyway, it didn't work, results weren't good. We went to Portsmouth. Oh, the club went to Portsmouth, got beat, I think, 5-0. And I get a call on the Tuesday. I'd had some in my ear saying you might be.
Yeah.
I get a call on the Monday saying, Mr. Burr, Reg Burr would like a word with you. Mm-hmm. So I went up to see Mr. Burr, and there was 10 games left, and he offered me the player manager's job.
Mm.
I hadn't been playing.
Maybe
he offered me the player's manager's job because I wasn't fit. So he knew I couldn't play, but I might be able to get a tune out of him. I think I'd always been somebody who'd been a leader, whatever.
Well, captain
the team, well, you know. Yeah. So with that, you know, I'm not blowing my own trumpet. I was given that. Might be because I had a big job and I shouted at everybody. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, I was seen as that kind of a guy. And I was coming to the end of my career. I didn't think that at the time, but quietly it turned out that way. I was never turning it down, no. Yeah.
To be able to be afforded that type of privilege, if you like, given what you've done as a player, to then people knocking on the door saying about what this could be as a manager. Again, the main theme of what we've spoken about today is bring it on. Bring it on. Yeah. Is that how that kind of happens?
Yeah, I think
why,
so.
Why wouldn't I go and do that role? It's a job of a lifetime.
Yeah, well, it's your progression. Isn't it? It's where you're going to go. I got the manager job at Millwall, and then and we had a really good time for a spell. You know, we got in the playoffs. Play some good football, playing a diamond. Mm-hmm. You know, it was Taft. I'm going to lie, Taft was one that said to me, Francis. So we discussed it and we played this diamond and coached it. And it worked really, really well for us. So we had a great time at Millwall for a time. And then it started to go, and it started to go a bit wrong when Jack was leaving, and the assumption was I was going to take the job. Assumption they're going to offer me the job, I got a chance to get the job. And results weren't going particularly well at Millwall. So as much as I was sad to leave, I was glad I did, because I think I might have been out in the air if I didn't get, amazingly.
Yeah.
And I took, you know, Republic of Ireland job, the manager's job. But on the way, I think we were maybe seventh when I left. Mm-hmm. And that year, I got relegated.
Yeah, because that would be, historically, when you look at it from a statistical point of view and a feeling around the club point of view, it was, without casting aspersions on who takes over, it looked nigh on impossible to end up in the position that Millwall ended up in, didn't
it? Yeah, it did. Yeah, no matter what or who took over. Mm. It was just so sad as well that happened.
Yeah.
Because we'd had some bad results, but we were up in the top.
Yeah,
near on, and we ended up, I think we were seventh or eighth when I left. And left, you know, following Jack Charlton. What a job that was.
And the Ireland job, of course, as history tells us, it comes with dramatic parts, it comes with conflict, it comes with disagreement, doesn't it? I mean, one particular instance, which is now being made into a film, with Steve Coogan playing your good self, which is in itself quite a surreal thing, because in my head, and it's the passage of time, and this is two men chatting here, it's like 2 minutes ago. Why are you making a film about something that happened 2 minutes ago? No, actually, it's 20 years ago. So that sense of that dynamic of Saipan, and something that you've spoken about so many, many, many times, I totally get that. The dramatisation that's in the works about it, will it get anywhere near how realistic and dramatic it was in real life, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the producer wanted me to ring him, sent me a message. I rang him and would I speak to Steve Coogan? And I said to the producer, I said, it began with F. And
Friday.
It was Friday, Saturday. And I said, 22 years on and you're making a film about it, you know. And he said to me, he said, mate, in this business, you can tell the same story every 10 years to a different audience. I thought, fair enough, Of course, I'll talk to Steve Coogan, which I did.
Yeah.
And you know what, if they portray it fairly, I don't know how they can. I don't know. There's always going to be sides to it, you know. And I've made my thoughts clear on it all along, you know. Whatever happened. I made my decisions. Roy made his decisions. Mm-hmm. And it was. Let me tell you. I mean, they're making a film about it. Tell me. You tell me the biggest stories to come out of a World Cup, and I'll tell you that it's the third, I bet.
Yeah.
Bobby Moore.
Yeah.
The Hand of God.
Yeah.
Maradona.
Yeah.
You tell me one then that's had more publicity
absolutely right.
Than Saipan.
Yeah.
So, as I said to the producer, fame at last.
This long, winding road to it. It's an amazing way to look at it, because, like you say, especially this day and age where division and conflicts is actively stoked. But
see, talking about it, Brooks, talking about it, I'm 65.
Yeah.
I don't know what Roy Keane is, whatever it is. Yeah. But he's a lot older.
Yeah.
And the older you get, you always start, you know, you start to more realistic. I mean, the only thing that age gives you is perspective on life and grandchildren. Yeah. Everything else is a pain in the ass that comes with age. Yeah. But that, you see my grandson today, fabulous.
Yeah.
Perspective. Yeah. So you start, everybody starts talking about it and you think, well, would I do it differently? Well, I'm still, you know, fairly stoic on that. That you know, what happened? Had I been, you know, I've no idea. No idea. And it gets a bit silly doing it 22 years on, saying, I'd do this, I'd do that. I'm 65.
Yeah.
I might have thought differently.
The man that makes that decision, at, like you say, 43 is a different man that would make the decision at 65. Absolutely. That's what life is, isn't it? And perhaps without that perspective and the ability to draw an experience, if you throw even further back, if you're making the same decisions as a 25-year-old, a 65, then you've got to be asking yourself some serious questions.
Yeah, I know. I see some of the headlines like, you know, it's billed as the worst prepared World Cup.
Yeah.
What an absolute piece of nonsense. Mm-hmm. I won't say what I really think about that because you'd have to edit it out. Piece of pile of nonsense. And we got to the last 16, you know, having the only ones I think to score against Germany, drawing with Germany, beating Saudi Arabia, drawing with Cameroon, drawing with Spain, actually should have beaten them and losing on penalties. It's a great World Cup.
Yeah.
It was a great World Cup. Sadly, those group of players don't get the
recognition
that it deserves.
Yeah.
Because of Saipan, which was a 3-day jaunty holiday before we'd have seen the hard work started, you know.
Done as, potentially as a bit of a carrot before the tough work of what that is.
Yeah.
I appreciate you talking about it. I know it's something that you asked a lot, and I know it's something that is part of what the Mick McCarthy story is, hence the fact, of course, there's a film coming. Yeah. But so then given that time in the island job, you're seeing all the attention, the constant kind of, I mean, because it's the press as well that you've got to deal with, isn't it? It might not be a day-to-day job in itself, but it seems to be bigger explosions with a bit more of a gap in between because it's squads together, game, tournament. So then you're coming off the back of that and then getting yourself back into club management and then picking a very straightforward option of trying to get Sunderland out of a sticky situation after springtime. So Mick Wanija, here's what we've got. Here's where we are. Can you do something with that, please?
Yeah, well, thankfully, I'm on the back of, you know, Millwall for a bit, but certainly with Ireland, all the things that you had to go through. By the way, that's the end of it. And prior to that, I'd had two attempts to try and we'd finished in the playoffs and lost in the playoffs. So that had been it was a relative success up to the World Cup, then it was a bloody damn success. It was, you know, don't think anybody has done it since anyway.
Right.
Sunderland, I mean, that came, strangely enough, I'd Fulham job was coming up,
at the same time?
No, just prior to it. And I got a mention for that. And
a realistic mention, as in?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, a realistic mention. Actually spoke to me and I just didn't have thought anything of it after that. And right out of the blue, I get a call to go and speak to Sunderland. Which, you know, fancy all day long, no matter where. They were bottom of the league.
Yeah.
I think they got 19 points, I think. We had about 9 games left. So I went up to meet them. I had no hesitation in taking that job. A little bit naive and thick, though. They thought I could even attempt when Howard Wilkinson's been the manager. I'm going to go up there and save him from relegation. Yeah. I never said that.
Yeah.
You know, that's your job.
Mm-hmm.
Go up. And so, I said, right, well, we'll try and win them all. And, of course, went up and stuck my neck out, stuck my chest out, we'll try and win every game, and we lost every single one of them. I mean, I guess though, when you've signed somebody and you give them the manager's job, you're loath to give them the sack because it was your decision.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's your fault, basically. If it doesn't work out, the person that you employed is a bad man.
But he did, and I enjoyed a really good relationship while I was there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm at Wolves, and similarly, you know, missing out on the playoffs. Yeah. Well, being in the playoffs, missing out on the playoffs, having spent the money, you know, there might have been a temptation there to change it, but, you know, thankfully they didn't, and we ended up with... We won the league the following year and had three seasons. Third season getting relegated.
Well, this proper consolidation, wasn't it, in the Premier League, giving up as it was.
Yeah.
So it's Ipswich comes off the back of that. It's playoffs with them as well. So there is this broad sense of you coming in and the success that you afford to these clubs. There's a dip in the toe at Apoel. There's back to Cardiff. The main thing coming off the back of your playing career and the managerial career, because there'll be people watching this that know about Mick McCarthy as a footballer, but it'll be Mick McCarthy, the manager, that really does stick out, and the way that you've gone about it. It's no nonsense is a phrase that gets thrown around. I think it's a better way of looking at it. It's very straightforward. You know what you want.
Honest is a really good word.
Honest is a real good way of putting it as well. And given what a manager's lot is, and this, I don't mean this in a Mickey taking type way. I mean, do you ever get used to getting sacked? Because it's an inherent part of a manager's job. You know when you're going to Sunderland, you know when you're going to Wolves, you know when you're going to Ipswich, Apoel, Cardiff, Blackpool. You know, at some stage you're going to come out, don't you?
Yeah.
How do you maintain that lightness of going, this is great for now, but in months, years, we'll be going.
Well,
I think see you later.
We all do. We all go in and negotiate our contracts. And generally, there's a clause that, you know, if you're getting sacked, they've got to do something. But that doesn't even compensate you for the way you feel.
Yeah.
I've never thought that, you know, right? So if you've got a year's salary, a 6 month salary, or 3 month salary, whoever it might be, or you're on gardening leave, which I never was. I never made sure I never on that. It don't compensate. You want to be there. You enjoy the job. You want to be in the job. I've never thought ever walking away or whatever compensation I might be getting, well, that's okay. Mm. Yeah, I've hated it and I felt bad about it.
But, is it an emotional?
I think the whole job's emotional.
Yeah.
Say some people, you hear people say, the manager doesn't really have anything to do with the players. Yeah. I just can't imagine that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if you, mostly. There'd be one or two that wouldn't be given a good word for me, I can assure you of that. But I'd say majority of the players that I've come across and managed wouldn't badmouth me anyway. And a lot of them, of course, we signed as youngsters or somebody who'd not been doing well, and we got them, and we got them back on track. So while I was appreciating their form, their ability, their way to play for me, I'm sure they've appreciated me, Taff, Terry Connor, who, you know, and without them, I wouldn't have, whatever little bit of success I've had, I wouldn't have had it.
That sense of what we've got here today, it's been lovely to be able to sit and kind of have a couple of hours in Mick McCarthy's world, because Fiona's been in, we've gorgeous little grandson's been in. It's been, about 18 months now since you were in a dugout, and you've obviously done a bit of travelling, you've had some real later life experience coming your way you've had to deal with as a family. Does that then mean that perspective pushes you to the point where you think, I could handle people giving me a load of crap from the stands or the sat? I'm happy where I am. Do you meet, because you're all, and I say this with love and respect, you're all a bit tat, managers. There is something there that grabs you, makes you feel alive, doesn't it?
Yeah, you just asked me a question there, if you ever get used to being sacked. And I said, no. But I've got used to getting some abuse on the sidelines. and it sounds like I've had a bad career. I think I'm doing all right, 1,040
Well, that's the thing,
because
the joy of it comes through in your face when you talk, playing and managing, and that speaks for itself. So I mentioned at the very start, 77, that's nearly 50 years ago.
Mm.
So half a century doing what you look.
Yes.
Leaving school and thinking, I'll just do that and see what happens. To be here 50 years later, sat where we're sat, that in of itself is success. The cynic in me, having played football at a certain level and the brickbats that you deal with and the good times are good. The not so good times aren't so good. But you've approached every single part of it as yourself and with that humility. So, that's the thing. I mean, because getting used to a clay must be very, very easy. But football's a brutal industry, isn't it? And maybe at 65, do you go, I've got a lovely life here. Is it the drug? Is it that Saturday afternoon at 5 o'clock? Well done, everyone. Everything I asked you to do today, you've done for once.
Oh, yeah.
We've won.
You definitely missed that. Yeah, when they do it. But I guess it's the energy for everything. Yeah. I don't see myself as lacking energy by any stretch of the imagination, both physically and mentally. But it definitely does, you know, wear you away. Because you need... I love Blackpool, and I wish Steve Bruce best of luck, because he's had a tragedy in his life as well. And it's a great club. Mm. I love my time there. You know, but we beat QPR 6-2 on a Tuesday night, and then we lose on a Saturday, and I went from Mick McCarthy's Tangerine out you know, whatever. I can't even sing what, you know. Mm. And because you're loving it on Tuesday night, you're getting beat on Saturday. It's horrible, and you never get used to that. And I'm never either. If you're asking me, would I do it again? Yeah, I've never got a job I've applied for. It's always come out of the blue that somebody's. And I say this, not if I have to apply for the job, I think now I'm not getting it anyway.
Okay.
That's not being arrogant. That's that if they don't know I'm out of work and they don't know what I've done, then there's no real point in calling me up. You know, who should I employ? Well. There's a 65-year-old Mick McCarthy. Well, he's had a good career. What did he do? If they have to do that, it's not happening.
Yeah.
So if they think, oh, he's here, he's been a firefighter in the past, he might be able to do something. And maybe, you know, and give you a consideration. But I am enjoying my time with my grandkids and playing golf, riding my bike. Yeah.
I miss it.
You see, I'm even talking about it. You know, I smile when I'm talking about it. I'm enjoying it. You know that. I was at the LMA League Managers Association in the British Museum speakers there the other day. I'm talking to Moyes, I'm talking to Paul Hart and a few of the lads.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Just being in their
company. War stories.
Being in their company. Yeah. Right.
So just to round off, just a couple of things. Having spent a bit of time around here and obviously I mentioned earlier on about your profile and you meet the person in the street. What's the most common thing that people say to Mick McCarthy in the street? Or if you're out your bike?
If they want to, they go, Roy Keane. Now, I'm not even sure if they want to annoy me with it, you know, but...
is it like a reflex action?
Generally, I actually... I've been asked it because they get you on the radio or something.
Yeah.
You know, can we get him on? And then we'll talk about management. And I know full well what's going on.
Where it's going,
And, and you had an incident. And I'm going to have to tell you, because I said to anybody, over the years, people have said it to me. I've said, hey, come on, man. Yeah. 20 years on. I said, in our family, we have a bit of a thing, like we have a competition. And they all go, hold on a minute, what's that? And I said, well... My kids said, you know, they went through it all in 2002. They went through it with me and my wife. So now, like 20 years on, if anybody mentions it, they win an award. They go, what's that award? I go, the day. Congratulations. You just won it. So.
I feel like I've won it then.
No. It's just one of those things. There's one or two had that. Yeah, I know. I had it with Alan Bent. I'm sure it was Alan. I had to give him Muppet the other day because I was on Talksport, so I couldn't.
I think that's a daily occurrence though with Bent. And just finally, as I said, you look very comfortable, very happy, very healthy. Does that mean that there's no dugout to come or?
No, I would like it. I'd consider it. I would like it. Yeah. I would, because I love being involved in it. Mm. And going back to what you said, what people say to me, I said to you earlier on in this, 99% of people who recognise me are lovely. Just, you know, it's either, hiya Mick, how you doing Mick? You know, I don't get any badness really from anybody.
And like you said, mate, you're an absolute diamond. No. You really are. Don't forget that. Pleasure. I've got to give you a proper handshake now, otherwise.
Look me now, yo.
No one better save it.
Tell me.
Thank you.